Chapter 8. In Defense of the Truth. The duty to worship God is based upon the fact that He is the Creator. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. Psalm 100, verse 3. Psalm 95, verse 6. In Revelation 14, men are called upon to worship the Creator and keep the commandments of God. One of these commandments points directly to God as the Creator. The seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Exodus 20, verses 10 and 11. Concerning the Sabbath, the Lord says further, that it is a sign that ye may know that I am the Lord your God. Ezekiel 20, verse 20. Had the Sabbath been universally kept, man's thoughts and affections would have been led to the Creator as the object of reverence and worship, and there would never have been an idolater, an atheist, or an infidel. The keeping of the Sabbath is a sign of loyalty to the true God. Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. It follows that the message which commands men to worship God and keep His commandments will especially call upon them to keep the fourth commandment. Sabbath reform in the last days is foretold in Isaiah. Thus saith the Lord, keep ye judgment and do justice, for my salvation is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the man that doeth this, and the son of man that layeth hold on it, that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it, and keepeth his hand from doing any evil. The sons of the stranger that join themselves to the Lord, to serve him, and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it, and taketh hold of my covenant, even them will I bring to my holy mountain, and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Isaiah 56, verses 1, 2, 6, and 7. These words apply in the Christian age, as shown by the context, verse 8. Here is foreshadowed the gathering in of the Gentiles by the gospel, when his servants preach to all nations the glad tidings. The Lord commands, seal the law among my disciples, Isaiah 8, verse 16. The seal of God's law is found in the fourth commandment. This only of all the ten brings to view both the name and the title of the lawgiver. When the Sabbath was changed by the papal power, the seal was taken from the law. The disciples of Jesus are called upon to restore it by exalting the Sabbath as the Creator's memorial and sign of His authority. Protestants now urge that the resurrection of Christ on Sunday made it the Christian Sabbath, but no such honor was given to the day by Christ or His disciples. The observance of Sunday had its origin in that mystery of lawlessness, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 7, which even in Paul's day had begun its work. What reason can be given for a change which the Scriptures do not sanction? Protestants acknowledge the complete silence of the New Testament so far as any explicit command for the Sabbath, Sunday, the first day of the week, or definite rules for its observance are concerned. Up to the time of Christ's death, no change had been made in the day, and, so far as the record shows, they, the apostles, did not give any explicit command enjoining the abandonment of the seventh-day Sabbath and its observance on the first day of the week. Roman Catholics acknowledge that the change of the Sabbath was made by their church and declare that Protestants, by observing Sunday, recognize her power. The statement is made, during the old law, Saturday was the day sanctified, But the church, instructed by Jesus Christ and directed by the Spirit of God, has substituted Sunday for Saturday. So now we sanctify the first, not the seventh day. Sunday means, and now is, the day of the Lord. The command is given, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression." Those whom the Lord designates as my people are to be reproved for their transgressions. A class who think themselves righteous in the service of God, but the solemn rebuke of the searcher of hearts proves them to be trampling upon the divine precepts. Isaiah 58, verses 1 and 2. The prophet thus points out the ordinance which has been forsaken. "Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord." Isaiah 58, 12 through 14. The breach was made in the law of God when the Sabbath was changed by the Roman power. But the time has come for the breach to be repaired. The Sabbath was kept by Adam in his innocence in Eden. By Adam, fallen yet repentant, when driven from his estate. It was kept by all the patriarchs from Abel to Noah to Abraham to Jacob. When the Lord delivered Israel, he proclaimed his law to the multitude. From that day to the present, the Sabbath has been kept. Though the man of sin succeeded in trampling underfoot God's holy day, yet hidden in secret places, faithful souls paid it honor. Since the Reformation, some in every generation have maintained its observance. These truths, in connection with the everlasting gospel, will distinguish the Church of Christ at the time of his appearing. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Revelation 14, verse 12. Those who received the light concerning the sanctuary and the law of God were filled with joy as they saw the harmony of truth. They desired the light to be imparted to all Christians. But truths at variance with the world were not welcome to many who claimed to follow Christ. As the claims of the Sabbath were presented, many said, "We have always kept Sunday, our fathers kept it, and many good men have died happy while keeping it. The keeping of a new Sabbath would throw us out of harmony with the world. What can a little company keeping the seventh day accomplish against all the world who are keeping Sunday?" By similar arguments, the Jews justified their rejection of Christ. So, in the time of Luther, papists reasoned that true Christians had died in the Catholic faith, therefore that religion was sufficient. Such reasoning would prove a barrier to all advancement in faith. Many urged that Sunday keeping had been a widespread custom of the Church for centuries. Against this argument, it was shown that the Sabbath and its observance were more ancient, even as old as the world itself, established by the Ancient of Days. In the absence of Bible testimony, many urged, "Why do not our great men understand this Sabbath question? Few believe as you do. It cannot be that you are right and all the men of learning are wrong." To refute such arguments, it was needful only to cite the Scriptures and the Lord's dealings with his people in all ages. The reason why he does not more often choose men of learning and position to lead out in reform is that they trust to their creeds and theological systems and feel no need to be taught of God. Men who have little of the learning of the schools are sometimes called to declare the truth, not because they are unlearned, but because they are not too self-sufficient to be taught of God. Their humility and obedience make them great. It was not the will of God that Israel should wander 40 years in the wilderness. He desired to lead them directly to Canaan and establish them there, a holy, happy people. But they could not enter in because of unbelief. Hebrews 3, verse 19. In like manner, it was not the will of God that the coming of Christ should be so long delayed, and his people remain so many years in this world of sin and sorrow. Unbelief separated them from God. In mercy to the world, Jesus delays his coming, that sinners may hear the warning and find shelter before the wrath of God shall be poured out. In mercy to the world, Jesus delays his coming, that sinners may hear the warning and find shelter before the wrath of God shall be poured out. Now, as in former ages, the presentation of truth will excite opposition. Many with malice assail the character and motives of those who stand in defense of unpopular truth. Elijah was declared a troubler in Israel, Jeremiah a traitor, Paul a polluter of the temple. From that day to this, those who would be loyal to truth have been denounced as seditious, heretical, or schismatic. The confession of faith made by saints and martyrs, those examples of holiness and steadfast integrity, inspires courage in those who are now called to stand as witnesses for God. To the servant of God at this time is the command addressed, "Lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth, and warn them from me." Isaiah 58, verse 1. Ezekiel 33, verse 7. The great obstacle to the acceptance of truth is the fact that it involves inconvenience and reproach. This is the only argument against the truth which its advocates have never been able to refute. But true followers of Christ do not wait for truth to become popular. They accept the cross, with the Apostle Paul counting that our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. With one of old, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 17, Hebrews 11, verse 26. We should choose the right because it is right, and leave consequences with God. To men of principle, faith, and daring, the world is indebted for its great reforms. By such men, the work of reform for this time must be carried forward.